Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
And it is the morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna this morning. Ah, you're looking good this morning. Got that extra hour of sleep on the weekend, right? I was watching one of the programs this morning, and they were talking about a poll. And I think most people said, just leave it alone. One or the other. Daylight savings times are standard, but this changing all the time. Now, I do have to say, the one in the spring is tough when you spring forward 1 hour. The one in the fall, not bad. Get an extra hour of sleep, et cetera, et cetera. But, I'm in the camp of just leave it alone because, you know, that standard time, we don't have to go changing back and forth all the time. Well, listen, good morning to you. Boy, what a busy week this is going to be. The ongoing shutdown, we're going to talk a little bit more about that now in its second week. But so much attention being paid on Election Day tomorrow. And you got governor races in Virginia and New Jersey. We're going to be talking about that. But I think most of the conversation, people are really captured their attention on the mayoralty race in New York, which right now seems to be a cakewalk for Zoran Mamdani. Now, some people just address him as a socialist. He goes beyond that, folks. I don't agree with President Trump all the time, but I do agree with him on the assessment. This man's a communist. And we're going to be talking about that this morning, just what he stands and what it could mean. What it could mean for New York, but also not just New York. It's also about the country. Where's the country headed when the largest city in the country could elect a communist? What does that mean? So we're going to be talking about that. But let's talk first about the shutdown, now entering its second week. And quite frankly, I'm a little surprised that it has gone this long. I thought for sure, you know, that one party or the other would back down. Democrats are getting some pressure, but there are polls out there that a lot of people are blaming the Republicans for this. And so it's, you know, they're talking about, you know, Trump is talking about, let's get rid of the filibuster, the so-called nuclear option, which right now, of course, you have to have 60 senators to vote in favor of the continuing resolution, which would open up the government again. And of course, the Democrats are saying, no, we don't want to do that because we want some more money. We want more money to subsidize Obamacare. We want to restore funding for NPR and foreign funding and all of that sort of thing. So that's where it stands this morning. As I mentioned, President Trump, he's squarely blaming the Democrats for that. Was listening to a little bit of what Trump had to say on the weekend on the shutdown. And also we have Mark Thiessen. He's a Fox contributor talking about where we are with this shutdown. Cut number one.
You have helped end these government shutdowns in the past when they came about. And you did it by bringing...
I'm very good at it, but I'm not going to do it by... I'm not going to do it by extortion. I'm not going to do it by being extorted by the Democrats who have lost their way. There's something wrong with these people.
This is the dumbest shutdown in the history of shutdowns. So the Republicans have... The House has passed a bill to fund the government at Biden-era spending levels. The Senate has voted on it more than 13 times, I think, now, and the Democrats are saying no. And right now, up until now, they haven't felt the pain because the government's been running on fumes, right? There was still some money in the coffers for a few weeks, but now the fumes are running out. And all of a sudden, air traffic, in a few weeks, we're going to be at Thanksgiving. Right? Air traffic controllers are going to stop working.
You know, LaGuardia, do you know in New York, 90% called in sick, just didn't show up for work?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I had a flight delayed the other day because the air traffic controllers in the landing airport weren't enough of them. And they're going to they have to provide for their families. So a lot of them are going to go and take other jobs. They're going to quit or they're going to leave, take a leave of absence. And so if you get to Thanksgiving where kids can't come home from college to spend Thanksgiving with their family, grandma can't make it to Thanksgiving dinner, and even so, you don't have a paycheck, so you can't afford a turkey, they're going to blame the Democrats for that.
So there you have it. I think the pressure is certainly building on the Democrats on this. You had a couple of Obama-appointed judges on Friday, I think it was, ordering the Trump administration to free up some money to continue the SNAP programs, the people who get subsidies from the government to buy groceries. And the dilemma on that one, I was listening to a legal analyst on this morning, and apparently the Trump administration is going to go back to these Obama judges and say, okay, how can we do it? Congress allocates certain amounts of money for various things. And what these judges were saying, all right, this SNAP program, you're out of money for that. So why don't you just take the money from somewhere else? Now, these are federal judges appointed by Barack Obama telling the Trump administration, go dip into that coffer over there. And Trump administration saying, yeah, we have $5 billion in these emergency funds, which are used, for example, if a hurricane comes along, disaster, that sort of thing. So apparently the Trump administration may go back to one of these judges today and say, okay, help us. It would be against the law for us to take money from this pot over here and just simply putting in that because Congress has passed where this money should go. So that's going to get really interesting. And then, of course, you heard Mark Thiessen talking about the air traffic control issue. I mean, these air traffic controllers, folks, this morning, they got their last paycheck, according to Secretary of Transportation Duffy on the weekend. They got their last paycheck last week. So they're showing up for work now and not getting paid. And some of these air traffic controllers, it's not because they're being nasty about this. They're saying we have to go out and find other work to supply for our families. This is how serious it's getting. And heard on the weekend, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of flights delayed and many, many cancellations because Duffy is saying, the transportation secretary, he's saying, listen, we're going to keep our skies safe, folks. But in order to do that with a discounted amount of air traffic controllers willing to come into work, able to come into work, we have to cancel some flights. We have to delay. There are ground delays in Nashville on the weekend. I believe Atlanta had the same problem. So this is getting pretty serious. And you may say, well, I don't plan to fly anytime lately. But hey folks, there are a lot of people flying out there. And, Mark Thiessen there just a moment ago said, you know, if this thing goes on, what happens as you get closer to Thanksgiving? A lot of people, you know, there's going to be a lot of hue and cry. Now, some people are saying that they think after the election tomorrow, maybe the Democrats will come around, but I don't know. It's really interesting. John Fetterman, the Democrat from Pennsylvania, now he has been voting with the Republicans to open up. He sees the wisdom in it because it's the American people that are being hurt by this political battle. Cut number 12.
Well, I mean, for me, fundamentally, I'm deeply, deeply distressing to know that 42 million Americans are going to lose their SNAP benefits. And now that's one of the big reasons why I refuse to shutting our government down. And again, I feel like the Democrats really need to own the shutdown. I mean, we're shutting it down. I know why they claim, because they want to address the tax credits, and I fully support that. I voted for all of their CRs, RCRs, every single time, and I refuse to put 42 million Americans and the kinds of food insecurity. Now, this is all is solved by just reopen our government and the people are now paid.
Yeah, but his Democrat colleagues aren't willing to do that. They're willing to allow these people to suffer. And, you know, the Democrats keep saying, well, you know, we want the Republicans to give us more money for Obamacare subsidies. But as I mentioned, that's not the only thing. They want money for a whole lot of things, like to the tune, I think somebody was saying, about $1.5 trillion. In other words, a lot of the stuff that went into the so-called big, beautiful bill, they're now wanting, you know, the cuts that were made in various departments. The Democrats just want to restore all of that. So people are hurting. Going to be interesting to see. A lot of people have been talking about Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, that he's going to face a challenge from AOC and the far-left Democrats. That may be a possibility. And speaking of far-left Democrats, of course, we were talking about the New York mayoralty race. I'll tell you what. Zoran Mamdani is, and this is being kind, a socialist, but he goes way, way beyond this, folks. Free this, free that. He is popular. He's got double digits in the polls right now of winning. It's almost a foregone conclusion. This man, who many describe as a communist, is going to win, and what that means. He's very popular with the young people. In fact, he was out campaigning in nightclubs this weekend. I want to play you a little clip of what he was saying there. And also, we're going to hear from Piers Morgan, the British commentator, on comparing to what Mamdani wants to do with socialist promises in Britain. Cut number two.
Are you ready to win this race? Juice.
Reminds me of our general election, where Keir Starmer and the Labour Party got in. They made a series of grandiose promises about what they were going to do, and they kept saying, we're not going to raise your taxes, we're not going to raise your taxes. There's a budget coming in 2 weeks, and they're absolutely going to raise our taxes, because they realised to pay for socialism, you've got to start taxing people with money. So I think that what you're seeing in New York is fascinating. You know, you mentioned my book, Woke is Dead. I don't actually think it's dead. They just haven't got the memo. I talk in the book about the Trump win again last November as being a seismic moment where wokeism was repudiated, where everything it stood for, actually, people went to the ballot box and were done with this. But you look at New York and you think, wow, they didn't get the memo. The Democratic Party is moving ever more progressive left, heading down to full-on socialism. And honestly, if I was a Republican thinking strategically and nationally, you've got to think this is going to be great. It's not going to be great for New Yorkers. It's going to be painful for New Yorkers, because Mamdani, look, he's charismatic, he's young, he's dynamic. As Obama said, he's doing, you know, he's campaigning great. But what hasn't Obama done? He hasn't endorsed him, because he knows that this form of a progressive far-left socialism is going to be an electoral disaster.
All right, yeah, that was Piers Morgan, who has some experience with socialism, being a Brit and seeing what has happened here. It's not like socialism hasn't been tried before, folks. It's been tried in many countries, and it doesn't work. I mean, Mamdani is out there promising, you know, free transportation. He's going to set up government grocery stores, universal daycare, government-funded daycare, and in the area of housing, designating certain housing areas there in New York. And here's the problem with that. Once you start, and people buy into the idea of free, and I'm doing air quotes here, they buy into the idea of free. Nothing is free, folks. People have to pay for it. And Mamdani, of course, your typical socialist, is saying we just need to tax the rich more. Well, the rich are going to leave town. They're already doing it. The exit out of New York, I was looking at a story on this the other day. The exit has already started. People are going to, if they were smart, they probably did it about several months ago, unload their property and leave town. That's what happens. Because somebody has to pay for this. But the other aspect of socialism is this. Yeah, up front, it's kind of like, and I've used this illustration before, socialism is the person who reaches out their hand and their palm is up and they say, here, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to give you that. And people say, isn't this wonderful? But then when they have you, when they have you in your grip, that open hand with the palm up becomes a fist because they put all kinds of qualifiers on this government-run grocery store, the free transportation, all of those kinds of things. It becomes a fist because it means more government control over your life. But right now, it appears the people in New York don't see that. Much more ahead here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We'll be right back.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna today. Much to talk about with Election Day tomorrow. And to help us sort it all out, our good friend Gary Bauer is with us, Campaign for Working Families. Gary, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Fred. Always good to be with you, particularly on a Monday morning.
Particularly on a Monday morning. And you had an extra hour of sleep, so you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good to say we're not on video.
Yeah. It's the wonderful part of radio, and I love it.
Yes.
Gary, much to talk about politically. Let's start with this shutdown. You know, there's a poll, I think, that came out last week that most Americans, according to this poll, are blaming Republicans, which is very odd because it's the Democrats that are voting against reopening.
Yeah, it is odd, and it's frustrating. Now, a lot of these polls, Fred, I always go to the matrix of who was polled and what the sampling was, and a lot of them are just polls of adults in the United States. And those polls are always 5, 6, 7 points worse for conservatives and Republicans than when you poll registered voters or likely voters. So I don't think it's quite what some of these polls are showing. Nonetheless, this is one of those cases where the media can and does play a major role. You know, if the shoe was on the other foot, all the media would be saying, the Republicans have shut down the government. Well, that's sort of what they're insinuating now, when it's clearly the Democrats that won't vote to reopen the government. But it is something we need to pay attention to. It's just one of those frustrating things about how we still operate in a culture where the media is overwhelmingly on the other side.
Now, President Trump has suggested maybe it's time for the so-called nuclear option, get rid of the filibuster. The Senate Majority Leader Thune, I think, is resistant on doing that. How do you come down on this issue of the filibuster?
Well, I think that the president was just trying to sort of scare the Democrats and get them to move faster on the negotiations that we believe are going on quietly behind closed doors. As far as the idea on its own, I seldom disagree with the president, but I even disagree with my wife sometimes, so I can disagree with the president too. I think it would be a bad move because, as some of the critics have said, if we get rid of this extended debate process in the Senate, as soon as the Democrats get 51 senators down the road and have the White House, they're going to make Puerto Rico and who knows what else states. They're going to add 3 or 4 more justices to the Supreme Court. A lot of these things can be done by simple majority votes in the Senate. So I think it would be a mistake to make that move. Now, I would also say, Fred, that if they get power again, they probably will try to suspend the filibuster, whether we do or not. But I think we'll be on stronger ground to oppose them if we don't do it now.
All right, Gary, how does this end? Some people are saying after the election on Tuesday that Chuck Schumer will back down and he will be able to say, look, we fought the good fight. Now it's time to help those American people that are being hurt by this. They're not getting their food subsidies, et cetera, et cetera. Do you see it wrapping up or are the Dems going to stick with this?
You know, there's never been one that didn't get wrapped up, but then those were times when it was basically Republicans that shut down the government. I'm beginning to get worried, Fred, that they won't end this. That as long as some of this polling shows that, broadly speaking, the public is blaming the Republicans, and the Democrats are scared to death of their left-wing base, and then throw in what could be a good election day for the Democrats tomorrow, and we could end up being in uncharted waters where they go, no, we're not backing down unless you spend another $1.5 trillion.
All right. Well, let's talk about the other matters to be dealt with in tomorrow's election. We've got governor races in New Jersey and in your home state of Virginia, and of course, the mayoralty race in New York, which is getting a lot of attention. Let's start with your home state of Virginia. Lieutenant Governor Winsom Sears trailing by about 11 points against Abigail Spanberger as of this morning, a poll that I saw this morning. So what has happened? Republicans have been, Governor Youngkin, great governor there, standing up for parental rights, keeping boys out of girls' bathrooms, keeping boys out of girls' sports, all those good things that I think helped Donald Trump get elected last year. But it looks like the people of Virginia are going to turn things back on their values and vote for Abigail Spanberger, who is okay with boys in girls' bathrooms and okay with boys competing in girls' sports. What has happened in Virginia in the last 12 months?
Well, Fred, sometimes I talk about what's happened in Virginia over the last 12 to 20 years. My family have lived in Virginia for decades, and we've watched it change right in front of our eyes. In Fairfax County here in Northern Virginia, the most populous county in the state, a majority of people in Fairfax County were not born in the United States. That's just an extraordinary statistic. And in addition to that, you've got millions of federal employees and their families in Virginia. There's a historical pattern here that we're up against, which is that in elections, these off-year elections in New Jersey and in Virginia, they almost always vote for the party that is not currently in the White House. Well, the Republicans have the White House. So all those things, I think, point to a very difficult challenge tomorrow in Virginia as well as in New Jersey, although it does appear to be closer there.
Now, in New Jersey, yeah, it seems there's just one point. Citarelli for the Republicans has gained ground dramatically over the last, I would say, 3 weeks or so. So do you see a flip there from Democrat to Republican?
It looks from these polls like there may be a real shot. Again, I would remind our listeners that when you look at the polls maybe 6 weeks ago, the Republican was down significantly. And not long after that, early voting started in New Jersey. I think we all agree this early voting idea is absurd. It's ridiculous because people are voting before they have all the information that often doesn't come out until the campaign progresses. But I'm concerned that in New Jersey, just like in Virginia, the Democrats have banked a lot of early votes, and that's going to be tough to overcome on Election Day.
Now, what's been interesting on these governor races is that Barack Obama was out campaigning on the weekends. I want to play a little clip of what he was saying on the campaign trail for those Democrats who are hoping to take over the governorships there in those states. Cut number five.
The point is, there is absolutely no evidence Republican policies have made life better for you, the people of Virginia.
I'll admit, it's worse than even I expected, but I did warn y'all. I did. The fact is, the truth is, right here in New Jersey and all across the country, there were plenty of people who voted for Trump and the Republicans anyway.
Yeah, that Barack Obama. It's very interesting. Apparently, he's been advising Mamdani in New York, but he didn't campaign for Mamdani. What do you suppose that is?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I don't know if you can tell, I'm doing this interview in my car. And when you put Obama up, I literally almost drove off the road. I mean, I don't know how this guy has any credibility whatsoever. By the way, the Democrat Party suffered during his presidency. They lost House seats, Senate seats, seats in the state legislatures. And of course, his record with Obamacare, which was going to solve all of our health care problems. Finally, people were going to be able to afford their health care. And here we are, not that many years later, and we're being told we've got to spend billions more and get government more involved in health care. I don't know what he's doing. Quite frankly, I associate Obama with the Mamdani wing of the Democrat Party. It's that far left, very aggressive, very uncomfortable with traditional love of America and American patriotism. Remember when Obama, his wife said, I have not been proud of America until they elected my husband president. Really? The First Lady of the United States in her life never found anything to be proud about in America? I mean, they were constantly saying things like that. So I put him in that same left-wing category. And this is bad news for the country, because as the Democrat Party goes further and further left, it's a two-party country, and periodically they're going to win. And that's why I don't know how we're going to resolve these irreconcilable differences.
Let's talk about, we have a break coming up in a few minutes, but I really want you to talk about the Mamdani factor. We will have what some people call, and I don't know, some say socialist, democratic socialist. Trump has called him a communist, and others have called him a communist, because his policies certainly reflect basically a government takeover of transportation, housing, grocery stores, you name it. What has happened in New York that would allow this man to probably going to be the mayor of the largest city in this country?
Yeah, you know, again, demography, demographics are everything in politics as well as in culture. And in New York now, the population is about 10% Muslim. And they see this as their chance to make a mark on the most important, iconic city in the United States. And then you've got the growing power of the National Socialists of America. In many ways, New York City is their ground zero. They're very well organized, and they have a whole lot of money. And then the third factor, Fred, I know the party, the Republican Party establishment, always bristles at this. But I believe we're living in an age of populism. And there's right-wing populism and there's left-wing populism. One of the two are going to be winning our elections, in my view, for some time. And Mamdani is an example of left-wing populism. He rails against the wealthy and the powers that run the city and city corruption and talks about the little guy. But he is nothing like the populism of Donald Trump. So we could very well wake up on Wednesday morning and the two great financial centers of the capitalist West, London and New York, will have Muslim mayors and be going down the road of far-left politics.
And I want to just focus in on that for a second. A Muslim mayor. We know what has happened. Dearborn, Michigan has a Muslim mayor. They have calls to prayer over speakers there. Can you see that happening in New York? In New York, which has probably the largest Jewish population as far as a city in America.
Well, you know, you're raising an issue that a lot of people get all squeamish about talking about, Fred, but you're absolutely right. Look, our previous waves of immigration came, for the most part, from countries that, broadly speaking, shared the values of Western civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization. You know, the immigration from Europe, from Eastern Europe, from Scandinavia, and so forth. Now, immigration in the last 25 years has come heavily from the Islamic world, much of it illegal, but it's happening here and it's happening all over Europe. And this has not resulted in anything good. It's resulted in almost every country in Europe, according to some analysts, being on the verge of a civil war because of the growing power of radical Islam aligned with the radical neo-Marxist left. And I think the same thing is happening here. You're going to see a much more aggressive Islam in America, and I believe the result will not be good for the future of the United States.
One would have thought that his comments that have been captured on tape, you know, he's anti-police, and there was a video that was caught, I think, last week where he said the boots of the police on the necks of New Yorkers and the laces are put together by the Israeli Defense Forces. One would have thought that might have alarmed people, but apparently it didn't.
Yeah, you know, Fred, it's you and I know about that, and certainly a good bit of the Jewish community in New York know about some of those quotes. But the media in New York that most people read, you know, and listen to, the TV stations and so forth, they have not been emphasizing those things about Mamdani. In fact, somebody took a look at this, about 95% of the coverage, news coverage in New York of Mamdani has been a positive, has been friendly to him.
All right,
and in the Jewish community.
Gary, we have to take a hard break here. Can you stick with us for another few minutes?
Yeah, absolutely, Fred.
All right, we got much more to talk to you about. Venezuela, Nigeria, just so much going on. So Gary Bauer, Campaign for Working Families, glad you can stay with us. Much more ahead here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Fred sitting in, don't go away.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Indeed, a Monday morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Jenna. Our guest this hour is Gary Bauer of Campaign for Working Families. Gary, thank you again for hanging in there. There's just so much to talk about this morning. I want to go back to what you were talking about just before the break, is the Islamic population, New York, Dearborn, Michigan, Minneapolis. You know, it's interesting when we look at how Europe is having to deal with this, elections in the Netherlands, in Italy, other places, Islam is the problem. Do you see Islam becoming an issue in this country in the next election, even in the midterms coming up next year?
Yeah, I think it can become a big issue, Fred. I mean, look, after 9/11, there was a great deal of concern about radical Islam and the threat that it posed. We ended up going into the Middle East and having two very costly wars. For the life of me, I can't quite figure out how in the aftermath of 9/11, we ended up massively increasing under presidents like Obama immigration from Muslim majority countries into the United States. And now we have this situation where there are as many Muslims in New York as there are Jews in New York. There may even be somewhat more Muslims in New York than Jews. Muslims are becoming a bigger voting bloc in the Democrat Party. And so in Michigan, for example, Donald Trump won the last time because Muslims in Dearborn, among other places, were angry at the Biden administration for the little support they were giving to Israel. So this is an issue. It matters. One of the things the president's doing is trying to make sure that illegal migrants, he's doing a good job of stopping. Legal immigrants are being tested seriously now about whether they share our values. There is no reason America should be importing hate into our country. We have quite a few haters on our own. We don't need haters from outside of America to come live here. That's not going to make us a better country.
Some would say our education system, particularly at the university level, has contributed to this problem. I mean, Zohra Mamdani's daddy is a professor at Columbia University. We have seen a huge influx of Muslim students thanks to scholarships from countries like Qatar. So has Muslim favoritism been purchased and particularly been fostered on our university campuses thanks to countries like Qatar?
Qatar has played a really negative role in all sorts of ways. I know the Trump administration thinks they can wean them away from some of those policies. But universities have accepted money from that country, as well as accepting money from communist China. You've got these Chinese cultural centers, Confucius centers, they're called on some campuses. You've got Middle Eastern study programs on all the major universities, and there are university students majoring in Middle Eastern studies. And those studies, as you say, Fred, have been funded and are often have professors picked by radical Islamic countries that have put up the money. So we've got a whole lot of privileged people in America, like these university communities, that have made decisions that might be good for them. You know, they get more money, they get more professors, but it's bad for our country. And it's one of the reasons that over the next 10, 20 years, Donald Trump's not going to be able to solve all this. We're going to need a series of serious presidents that will bring America back to our Judeo-Christian roots, or the country is going to fail.
All right. You mentioned President Trump. He was asked on the weekend about the thousands of Christians being persecuted, murdered, slaughtered in countries like Nigeria. One play, a quick clip from, it's going to be clip number 9, Trump being asked about Nigeria on the weekend. Cut number 9.
Could be. I mean, a lot of things, I envisage a lot of things. They're killing record numbers of Christians in Nigeria. And they have other countries very bad also. You know that part of the world, very bad. They're killing the Christians and killing them in very large numbers. I'm not going to allow that to happen.
Well, Gary, the question I have for you, and Trump signaled there right at the last comment, I'm not going to allow that to happen. Would it be possible?
Yeah.
Would it be possible we send troops into Nigeria? Second question, would that be a good idea?
Yeah, I'm skeptical that we would send troops into Nigeria. It would quickly become a quagmire. I could imagine perhaps sending U.S. military advisors to help the Nigerian government military. But quite frankly, Fred, I don't think the current government of Nigeria really cares that Christians are being massacred. It is a heavily Islamic government itself, and I think it turns a blind eye to what's going on to Christians. You know, I don't know about you, Fred. Sometimes I go to church and I get upset because it's hard to find a parking place, and you know, it's what am I going to do? I lose my religion. Christians around the world, Fred, go to church every Sunday with their families. Very modest churches. They sometimes have to walk miles to get to them. And when they do that, they have a reasonable expectation that they and their family may not get out of that church alive, because every Sunday, churches are set on fire, desecrated. Churchgoers in countries like Nigeria are mowed down, killed by radical Islamists. We are privileged here as Christians to have this country, and we need to do everything we can to defend our rights here while we also do everything we can to help our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world.
Amen to that. Well, on the other foreign policy matter that's getting a lot of attention these days is what we're doing with Venezuela. The drugs coming out of there, hitting the narco terrorists, these boats coming out of Venezuela and other countries. Some talk about, you know, we're sending Navy ships very close to the coastline of Venezuela. What is your expectation of how far Trump is going to go as far as possible even regime change in Venezuela?
I think that, the last few administrations have been interested in trying to get the Venezuelan government out and replace it with a government that can restore the wealth and success of Venezuela. It was probably the wealthiest country in Latin America. And once they elected a socialist, all that's been destroyed. Are you hearing me, New York? Trump, in that sense, is doing what other presidents have done. But, of course, it's Donald Trump. So he's going even further by massing these military forces. I believe he's conducting psychological warfare on the Venezuelan government. And I think he's trying to encourage the people in Venezuela to rise up on their own to try to regain freedom. I don't believe generally President Trump will commit troops anywhere unless he's got a game plan to quickly and overwhelmingly win a conflict and accomplish the goal. He's very clear. He wants no more quagmires like Afghanistan, Iraq, and sadly what happened in Vietnam, where our men in all those wars fought bravely, but were undermined by politicians in Washington, D.C. But that's what I think his goal is here.
We're talking with Gary Bauer, Campaign for Working Families, lives in the Washington area, has had the pulse of politics. I want to bring things back home a little bit more right now. Last weekend, Senator Grassley, he chairs the Judiciary Committee, unveiling what he has found out through whistleblowers about the extent of Jack Smith and how he went after Joe Biden's political enemies. We're talking hundreds of subpoenas issued, not only against Republican politicians, but Republican groups. Some people say this makes Watergate look like child's play. A Justice Department under Joe Biden that went after, it reminded me a little bit of, what was it, Lois Lerner, head of the IRS back, who went after conservative groups when she was head of the IRS. This looks pretty serious, and it kind of proves what we all suspected, that we had a weaponized Justice Department under Joe Biden.
That's a great analysis, Fred. You know, years ago, I remember when I first found out this, I was very disappointed and disillusioned. J. Edgar Hoover head of the FBI at the time, authorized wiretapping Martin Luther King because they thought he was involved with communists, and they were afraid he was going to stoke a revolution. It just seemed to me to be, when I heard about it and read about it, a complete abuse of power. What is being has been done in recent years by the political left in this country when they have power to weaponize federal law enforcement agencies, weaponizing the CIA, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security. It's unacceptable. It's dangerous. It's a national scandal. And people have, they must be held accountable. I you know, the Wall Street Journal wrote an editorial, Trump is getting revenge. That's a mistake. I've seen some Republicans on Capitol Hill. We shouldn't act the way the other side does. We're not acting the way the other side does. We're holding people accountable for violating the Constitution of the United States and violating the constitutional rights of conservatives, Christians, Republicans, because we were opponents and are opponents of the radical left's agenda. That cannot be allowed to happen in the United States without people going to jail when it's discovered. And my hope and prayer is that before this is over, that will be the outcome.
Very, very interesting. And, you know, it's one of those fronts Republicans are fighting on. But, you know, it always bothers me, Gary, that the mainstream media, of course, dismisses all of this. And unfortunately, the American population at large may not even know this is going on.
You're right. I mean, a lot of this stuff is ignored. When some of these disclosures are made, we always check out what the big three networks are doing. Often they give 0 seconds to covering it, or they'll give 15 seconds. So, you know, if you blinked, you would miss the little story. And of course, contrast that to every little bump in the road that happens under a Republican president, and particularly under Donald Trump. It becomes a cause celeb. This is the worst thing that's ever happened in America, and the American people hear that message over and over and over again.
Gary, we just have a few minutes left. I've got to ask you, because I know you love Israel, you love the Jewish people, and have been an outspoken critic of those who attack Israel. But there's something going on within the conservative community, kind of broke late last week, has to do with Tucker Carlson interviewing a very anti-Semitic guy, Nick Fuentes, and the head of the Heritage Foundation got involved, kind of initially at least supporting Tucker Carlson. Are we starting to see a divide within the larger so-called MAGA community when it comes to Israel? I get worried about this fighting that's going on amongst, it seems, conservatives.
No, I'm worried about it too, Fred. And I, on the other hand, I'm glad that there's been such a backlash to Tucker Carlson interviewing this guy Fuentes, who is an admirer of Adolf Hitler, questions whether the Holocaust actually happened, and was a terrible critic, hater of Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA. So I don't know what in the world Tucker Carlson was thinking. I think he made a mistake bringing that guy, that loser, on his show. And I wish Tucker would own up to that. But Tucker has done something else. He's verbally attacked Christian Zionists. Well, Christian Zionists are Christians that believe the Bible when the Bible says that God made a covenant with the Jews and gave them a homeland in Judea and Samaria. The Bible is very clear about that. The Jews are the indigenous people of Judea and Samaria, of where they are today, Israel. So I agree with you. I'm a little concerned about all of this, but I want to make it very clear. You cannot be a Christian. Well, you can't be a Christian and hate anybody, really. We're told even they love our enemies. But you certainly can't be a Christian and hate Jews.
Yes.
Jesus was a Jew. His
Amen.
Family were Jews.
Amen.
The whole Bible was written by Jews. So,
all right, Gary.
Deal with this.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, got to run. Gary, I love your end of day. How can people get that end of day report?
They can go to our OUR, OurAmericanValues.org.
our American Value Star. Gary, thanks so much. Great to be with you. Hey, folks, this hour has screamed by once again. It's been good to be with you this morning. Much more great programming here on American Family Radio. My thanks to Devin and Adam for all their help this morning. We'll see you again soon.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.